Hey, good chodesh, everybody. It's a beautiful way to start, even though in reality, the two-day Rosh Chodesh, really, tomorrow's the beginning of Adar Sheni. Rosh Chodesh, the beginning of the month, the beginning of new Hischachus. New Hischachus, and to start with Torah, and maybe of the most important areas of our life. From the moment we're zoiche to have our first children, that's our priority. That's our everything. And that doesn't change as our children get older. Our children are our everything. There's nothing more important in our life. And I realized this when one of my highlights of my life always is going to visit Gedolim, going to visit Big Tzaddikim. Whenever I'm in Eretz Yisrael, that's definitely the highlights of the trip. And for years, I'd go visit Gedolim, Tzaddikim, and ask for Eitzah, ask for Brachos. And right when I was zoche to my first children, to becoming a father, all of the Brachos, all of the Eitzah, just maneuvered into having to do with my children. As if I didn't matter anymore. It was all about my children. And that's how we live our lives. We live for our children. There's no secret that the first mitzvah in the Torah is Pru Ravu. The very first mitzvah in the Torah is the commandment, the obligation, the responsibility to have children. And part of that mitzvah is not just having children, but raising children. And be mechanech our children, educating our children. B'derech Torah mitzvahs, in the way that we've been taught, in the way that we want them to not just follow in our footsteps, but surpass everything that we are in the most special of ways and just bring us nachas and bring the world nachas. And the truth is, as the years go on and our children get a little bit older, and they naturally feel more independent and are more independent, sometimes there's a very new challenge, and specifically in the years of dating and then beyond, in marriage. And sometimes we have to maneuver and try to figure out exactly what that means for each and every one of us. What is our role? As parents, as our children believe from their standpoint that period of time of being mechanchim is over. But the truth is it's not. And first of all, it's important just to note, had this chus, it was about a year ago, year and a half ago, to be with Rav Shlomo Amar. Shlomo Amar is a gadol adar of the biggest tzaddikim in the Sephardic world. A Jew who's holding in all Torah's nigla and nister, all of the revealed and all of the hidden Torah. An incredible, incredible person. One of the most special people in my life that I've had been zoche to spend time with. And it was soon after my son was married. My oldest son got married, my first married child. And I asked him this very question, because I was struggling and trying to figure out. And I asked him just straight up. I was walking with him and I asked him, Rebbe, the mitzvah of chinuch, on just a purely halachic level, now that my child is married and going to be starting his own mishpacha, does that end? And he looked at me and he said to me that now the child, you have to believe, has chachma, has their own wisdom. And there's no question that the approach has to be more hands-off. But at the same time, the mitzvah of chinuch never ends. Ein lo shir. That was his lashon. Ein lo shir. It continues. But it continues perhaps in a new way, in a new fashion. There's a very important pasuk that guides us in this. A very important pasuk that at least is the starting point to appreciate, and a very important appreciation as the foundation before we get into the chinuch of even our children when they reach this age. It's a pasuk that often when I'm zoche to be counseling young adults who are preparing to get married, a chasen and kala, I really spend a lot of time emphasizing this. And it's important for parents to hear as well. Pasuk in Parshas Bereishis says, Akein yazov ish es aviv es imo. At the end of that pasuk is very beautiful in marriage. understanding that a husband and wife, when getting married, v'yiyu l'basar echad, become one. It's a very beautiful pasuk, very important to understand that no longer is there an I, there's only a we. Like the famous story of Avraham Levine, when he walked into the doctor with his wife whose leg was hurting and said, "Our leg hurts." That's v'yiyu l'basar echad. And young couples, as they're sitting preparing for their marriage, have to understand that. And it's one thing that I talk about. But the beginning of the pasuk is Al Kein Yazov Ish Asav V'Zimo. The Torah is telling us, and we're guided by the Torah. The Torah is the objective truth. The Torah is the light of our lives. Ki Ner Mitzvah V'Torah Ar. The Torah tells us that when a couple gets married, there's a sense of leaving their parents' home. Al Kein Yazov Ish Asav V'Zimo. Umizdabik Lishto. There's a new reality. A real change that occurs. And what that means is, and I'll tell you as parents, you should hear, I tell this to every chassan and kala, that when you stand underneath the chuppah, your spouse becomes the most important person in your life. Even above your parents. And you're dedicated to your spouse more so than to your parents. And that doesn't mean you shouldn't continue to have an incredible relationship with your parents. A very special relationship with your parents. One full of kibud ve'em, one full of tremendous respect. At the same time, there are going to be situations in life that you have to be there for your spouse, even above your parents. And for example, you know, the relationship between parents and children, children to parents, is one of unconditional love. Something very, very special. And what happens that means is, let's be real, let's be honest, we as parents do things wrong and say things wrong, and children surely do things wrong and say things wrong. We have real relationships. And the people in our lives that are easiest to let things slide are our children, or children for children, our parents. Because there's such deep love, there's a feeling of such gratitude and closeness. So of course I'm going to let it slide. And maybe if my parents did something or said something to me that someone else said or did to me, it might take months till I look in their face and talk to them again. But by tomorrow, we're all good with my parents. Because my parents have given me everything in the world. And so too my children, there's such unconditional love. My children, my child, my son, my daughter could say something to me that someone else did. I may never talk to them again. And by that night, I'm giving my child a big hug. And whether they apologize correctly or not, I love you with my whole heart and soul. And that's something very, very special. So what happens often, we get married, and we bring our wife into the picture, we bring our husband into the picture, and even if I have the greatest parents in the world, where my mother goes and says to my wife in during engagement, you know, "I want you to know you're going to be like a daughter to me." Let's be real. There's no such thing. I want you to know, no, MS, you have to say it as it is, because we're building false expectations. With all being said that often it's hard, there can be, and hopefully will be, a beautiful relationship between a mother and a daughter-in-law. It can be very close and very special, with a lot of chachma. But it's never going to be like a daughter. A daughter-in-law is not a daughter, a son-in-law is not a son. It's not. And when you feel there's those expectations, we're doomed for failure. It's a different relationship. And therefore, a daughter-in-law, for example, is not going to be able to move on so quickly like a daughter would. Is not going to be able to let things slide in that same way. And now suddenly, parents maybe said something, did something that hurt a daughter-in-law's feelings, hurt a son-in-law's feelings. They don't have the ability. It's not the relationship of unconditional love of a child. And we have to appreciate that and understand that. So now you have a couple, a young couple that's just married, trying to figure out so much about life. And here you have, we'll just use the example, the husband's parents slighted his wife on some level. Now, if his parents did that to him his entire life, he's let that slide. He knows his parents, he gets his parents, he understands them, he knows what they've done. He's done for him. By tomorrow, by that night, it's all good. But his wife can't do that. So now he's stuck in between. His own parents that he's always been able to just let slide, and he has unconditional, and his wife who's hurt. Al kein yazov ish asav v'zimo v'zdabik v'ishto. You know what that means? My wife is my priority. And for the first time in my life, I have to go to my parents and deal with something maybe I never had to deal with in the same way and stick up and be there for my wife in a real way. And that's something important for young couples to understand. And until you stand underneath the chuppah, that's not true. It's not even true in engagement. Halachically, engagement, nothing's changed. I tell a young couple they're engaged, they're ready to get married 2 weeks from now. They dated for 3 months, they're engaged for 3 months. They feel they have so much love, they don't really know what love is, but that's another discussion for another time. Halavai, they'll understand that with time. At that point, their parents are still the most important people in their lives. But the moment they stand in the chuppah, that all changed. My spouse is the most important person in my life. And hopefully I'll still continue to be super close to my parents in incredible ways. And they're a close second, perhaps, but second. And we as parents have to appreciate that. And we have to be willing to understand that. And we have to be willing as well to somewhat let go. And that doesn't mean, again, that doesn't mean not have a beautiful, incredible relationship, but we're going to get to that and explain. But somewhat let go, and that's very hard. That's very hard when we've given our entire existence, our entire life, sweat and blood and time and sleepless nights to our children, and suddenly, Yom HaChuppah, and we have this beautiful celebration, and to be able to like let go is hard. And to say that my children now are going to be making their own decisions and be able to maneuver through life on their own without me by their side every moment is hard. But we have to. You know, it comes to situations where our children have their own children. We're zoche to be grandparents, and that's beautiful and that's wonderful. And then we want somehow, just naturally, like a say in that, in what the name is going to be. My grandparent, who I loved so much, who my child didn't even know, but how could you not name after? You're really not going to name after your great-grandfather? You know what type of tzaddik he was? You know how the world looked at him? Now, there's the other side involved that I totally don't even think about, because maybe my son or daughter, their spouse, also has somebody like that. And guess what? We had the opportunity to name our own children, and now we have to allow our children to name their. Yeah, is it okay to, of course, give a suggestion and have a conversation? We'll get to that a little bit. But when we do it in a way where we put pressure and make them feel that it's not our choice. We've allowed them to get married. We've allowed them to move on and build their family, to have their own children. They have the choice to name their children. And how are we thinking that we have to be able to let go? Pesach is coming. You're not going to be by me for the first days, really? How are you not going to be by me for the Sedarim? Well, there's a whole nother family involved here. And they have to maneuver and figure out what makes sense. And of course, we can again request and say what works, what we believe we'd love you to be there for, but then allow our children to make the decisions that they make. So we as parents have to be willing to understand, to let go. And this is true, I'm talking about married children, but the truth is it's also, even though the pasuk's talking about marriage, to some degree with older children at a point when they're at marriageable age. Because they feel at that point, it's not to the same degree, of course. You don't have this concept of moving on in the way that you do for marriage. But at marriageable age as well, when they have friends that are being married and they have feel that sense of independence, it's important to know how to take a step back and believe that you've raised your children in a beautiful way and trust them a little bit to make their decisions. There's a beautiful Rashi. This beautiful Rashi in the beginning of Baloscha, explaining what it means, Baloscha, Saneros, to light the menorah. And the Rashi seems very, very strange, because we all know what it is to light a fire. He seems to be giving you like the technical pshat in what it is to light a fire. And he says, you light the fire, Achishol Heves Ola Me'aleha, until the flame is rising up and burning by itself. Yeah, what else would you do? Do you think that you, when you're lighting a candle, you have to keep your hand there forever until the candle burns down? Of course you light the candle until the flame is burning by itself. And perhaps, B'derech Drush, it's teaching us also, when it comes to being mechanech, our children, when it comes to raising our children, we're lighting a fire, but we have to be willing to know when to let go, Achishol Heves Ola Me'aleha, to allow that flame to burn by itself. And be able to take a step back. That's Nakuda Aleph. That's the first and foremost. But it doesn't mean our chinuch ends at that stage of marriage and marriageable age. It doesn't mean that. As Rav Amar told me, it's ain lo shir. So what can we be? And what is our role in parenting our children? And the truth is, this topic, when I was asked to give on the topic, I thought it's so beautiful. I don't know if I've spoken on many, many, many topics. I don't know if I've given parenting talks. I've given shiurim on parenting, but specifically to this age, I don't believe I have yet. And I was very intrigued thinking about it, because I myself have children at this age. And I've been dealt for years with children at this age. So what is our role and what is the chinuch at this point? So I was thinking about it, and I think we could base the idea on the following pasuk, on a very beautiful pasuk when it comes to chinuch, which could be understood on different levels. The pasuk in Mishlei tells us, Shema b'ni musar avicha v'al titosh toris imecha. Very famous pasuk. Listen, my son, to the musar of your father, and do not forsake the Torah of your mother. There's a lot we could get into here, and much b'mfarshim to understand the difference between Torah Savicha and Torah Simecha, the different role of a father and of a mother when it comes to raising children. To listen as opposed to do not forsake. There's a lot here which tells us that women seems to be even more of a role, perhaps, in a certain sense. Altitosh is a much stronger language than just to listen in raising children. But of course, men have to know their part. And there's a lot to discuss here. But I want to perhaps suggest a new understanding. Torah Savicha and Torah Simecha. Torah Savicha and Torah Simecha is not just a father and a mother and their roles, which of course it can be understood in that way. But I think it could be also understood in a different way, of a general sense of a form of chinuch, of a type of chinuch. And there's a type of chinuch called Torah Sivicha, and there's a type of chinuch Torah Zimecha. Torah Sivicha is Shema b'ni Musar Avicha. Musar, rebuke, to preach, to push. Torah Zimecha, v'al titosh Torah Zimecha, is a very different type of Torah. It's not b'derech Musar, not in a harsh fashion, not in a preaching fashion. Very soft. Very soft, just teaching. Just teaching. And maybe I want to just suggest, Avicha is Aleph Beis, and Imecha is Aleph Mem. We know we have an Aleph Beis. And Aleph Beis is clearly the beginning of the Aleph Beis. The very beginning. Aleph, which is the origin, which is the parent. Both of and aim start with an Aleph. Aleph is the parent. Aleph Beis of is the very beginning of one's life, are the earlier years of a child's life. That's Aleph Beis, the very beginning. Aleph Mem, Mem is the middle letter of the Aleph Beis. Those middle years, those years of growth, those years where our children are moving on from the earlier stages to be more mature, to be more independent, to move on to marriageable age and marriage itself, to have their own children, the middle years of life. So maybe Torah Savicha, of are the earlier years of life, and aim are the later years of life. And at the earlier years of life, it's true. We tell our children often what to do. We preach to them. We give them musar. We explain to them. And as children, hopefully have built a certain respect for us. And for the most part, even though sometimes not, and we have to learn with those children, they listen. And they absorb. And they internalize. But as the year goes on, that musar cannot be part of the equation. It's only Torah Simecha. It's a much softer way of giving over Torah. A much softer way of giving over that which we feel is best. That we no longer could preach. We no longer could push. There's going to be an immediate wall that's put up, a defense mechanism, when we're too harsh, when we're strong. Because every child at that point wants to feel, they're already at that age. They want to, it by not being that way, it defeats their whole being. It means I have not grown into who I perceive myself as. And of course, every child, when they're 17, 18, 19, 20, 22, 23, of course they're still young. And of course they have years to still grow. We have years to still grow. Adam Lamal Yulad, we're all growing at different places, and they have much to learn. And we have way more experience than they have. But we have to let go a little bit and recognize what's going to work and what's not going to work. And definitely, the Musar of Icha is no longer going to work at all. And this is true for a father or a mother. It has to be Torsi Mecha across the board. It has to be much softer. I remember I was dealing once. There was a young woman, and I was for a few summers, the Rav in Camp Dina, girls, beautiful girls' camp in East Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania. And there was a young woman there, a 13-year-old girl, 14-year-old girl. And she was, in this camp, almost everybody is Baruch Hashem, come very from individual, Shomer Torah Mitzvos. And this particular girl came to camp, and she was, when I got to know her, she was, mom, she, it's a long story, but she came to me the first Shabbos she was there. She came in the middle of the summer, and she told me, it's the first time she kept Shabbos in a few years. She opened up to me, the first time she kept Shabbos in a few years. There's a lot behind that story for another time. And then I ended up building a kesher. She used to come talk to me a lot, and she was Baruch Hashem. She had a tremendous amount of growth, and she's still growing tremendously. I'm still in touch with this young woman. This is a few years ago. And I got to meet her parents on visiting day. I didn't know anything about her. She was from out of state, and her parents came visiting day. And her parents were like such beautiful, wonderful Bar Yerushalayim. Father was sitting and learning in Koilel in a community. Wonderful people, Bali Midos, wonderful people. So how'd that happen? What happened exactly there? How was this? And this girl was a wonderful girl, like a beautiful girl. What happened? And through our conversations before even meeting her parents and beyond, like her parents were just like extremely harsh and stuffing down her throat all of Torah and mitzvot in a way that was unhealthy. And she rebelled against it. And we have to understand the children and know how to talk to them. But specifically at those older ages, it's just no longer going to work because every child at that age feels mature and feels that they're an adult. And they don't want to hear that. There's going to be that immediate defense mechanism put up. And we have to understand that as well. We have to understand how to talk and how to inspire. But I'll tell you what's most important. What I believe is most important and what I'm going to share now is true as well for young children, but how much more so at these ages that we're talking about. The Mishnah of Avos tells us in the first parak, Asei lecha rav uknei lecha chaver. Asei lecha rav, make for yourself a rav. And the truth is, a rav is a teacher. A rav is an inspiration. A rav is each and every one of us. As the moment we become a parent, by definition, we also become a rav. By definition, every one of us, to our children. But it's very interesting. I don't know if you've ever looked at the Mishnah like this. There's a vav achibur. A vav attaches. It doesn't say as if they're different ideas. Say lecha rav, kenei lecha chaver, mekabels adam, say refanim. It doesn't say this. Asei lecha rav u kenei lecha chaver. We attach the two as one. Make for yourself a rav, and acquire for yourself a friend. Meaning what? There's a lot of deep Torah in that. First of all, your Rebbe, you should feel, is your best friend in the world. And the Rebbe has to know he should be a best friend to his Talmidim and Talmidot. But as a parent, if we're that Rebbe, that means of our most crucial roles is that our children should feel that we're their best friends. We're not just their parent. And that's a very hard balance to really learn. But we have to always have, in some sense, that balance between being the mother, the father, as well as a best friend. Those are the best parents. Asei lecha rav uknei lecha chaver. But when we maneuver to these later years, the Aleph Mem years, the knei lecha chaver, I believe, has to take off and take over a lot more than the asei lecha rav. We have to maneuver into that our children feel that we're their best friends in the world. They're there by our side, and we love them, and we care about them as friends. And we respect them as friends respect each other. We show them respect. We show them how proud we are of their decisions. And we're a true friend to them. And a true friend to them also means we invest ourselves into their interests, even if they're not our own interests. And that's something that could go a very far way. I'll tell you a story that happened a few years ago. This story was a student of mine, a young man, 18 years old. Happened the summer after his senior year in high school. So really the place where around this tkufa of chinuch begins. Already post-high school. And this young man was struggling a lot, to say the least, in Avodas Hashem. Struggling a lot in life. Really in not a great place. He came to his father in that during that summer. He was a big fan of an artist, a singer. Maybe some have heard of. If not, it doesn't matter at all on any level, and we don't need to hear of him. But his name is Kanye. Kanye. Here, some knows, some's holding. If you do, good. And this was before Kanye happens to be became clear post this story. Just to understand, this was a few years ago, that he's a blatant anti-Semite and someone that regardless of not getting into the discussion of Jewish music, non-Jewish music, especially rap music, which is a whole different genre of non-Jewish music. But like he's someone none of us should ever listen to or allow our children to listen to because he's just a blatant anti-Semite. But that's another discussion, and we're not going to go there now. But this was way before that became clear. And this young man who was ultimately struggling tremendously, for him, that was the least of the issues. That was not anything anyone was trying to inspire him to not be a part of right there at that point in his life, trust me. Fine, so he listened, and that was he was a fan of Kanye. Now Kanye, at the time, that summer, came out with a new album, and he was having, where the album was being what they call dropped, where it was coming into the world that you could listen to this the music, and it was dropping. It was like going to be on Apple Music, Spotify, Chesnish, all these things. At midnight on a particular night, it was a Thursday night actually. I remember it was a Thursday night, and he was having his fans were getting together, and he was going to be there in Atlanta in the football stadium in Atlanta, 100,000 people. He wasn't performing. Listen, he wasn't performing. He was going to be there as they all listened to the album together. And he was going to just be in the middle walking around. He's a very interesting man. I saw a picture of it after the fact because I was interested in what was going on here. He's wearing like this whole hood. You don't even see his face and he's just in the middle. I don't know, whatever does it for people. And everybody listens together to the album, his fans. And he's there dancing, walking back and forth, not singing. They're listening to just the recording. And this young man, he was a big fan. He wanted to go to this. He wanted to go to this, and he was going to go alone. All his friends were away in camp, and like they weren't fans. He was going to go, he wanted to go alone to this performance. And the father called me up and says, Rebbe, what do? Do I let him go? Because again, he was struggling a lot and you have to find that balance. And he's already at this age post-high school. And like, do I let him go? I don't want, and it was a very delicate relationship. And you have to, what do I put my foot down on? What do I not put my foot down on? Do I let him go? Do I let him go to Atlanta? His family's in New York. They let him go to Atlanta. So they say to the father, are you out of your mind? Of course you don't let him go. Do you know what it is to let a teenager be alone in a city at such an event and who knows who he's going to be surrounded by and what he could fall into alone? And when one is alone, the guard is down and they cross over lines that they never would cross over if they were with other people at times. And Maven Yavin, they say, no, you don't. But you know what you do? You go with him. You go with him. And he's like, are you Rebbe, really? Like, he didn't expect that at all. Like, that as his Rebbe, I'm going to tell this guy to go to a Kanye West concert. Like, I'm like, yeah, you go with him. You and your son haven't been in a good place. And your son's definitely not in a good place. You know what it'll be? If you say to your son, yeah, I want you to go, but I'm coming with you. And be by his side. I know you can't stand this music. And I know you don't enjoy this music. And he knows that also. And you fly. And it was a last minute. It was going to be crazy expensive. And it's not a family that had a lot of money. And to buy a ticket for one night, because the next day was Friday, to come back for Shabbos. It was a very expensive ticket. And the tickets to the thing. And you spend all that money. And now it's not only spending the money on one person. You're spending the money on two people. And you be by his side. He's doing it anyway. He's listening to this music. You know what that will mean for him? You know how much you'll appreciate it? You know how much you'll gain in the future from that? You know what type of relationship will be built? You know how you're showing you that you're his chaver? Showing him that? And he went. He listened. He didn't just call me to discuss. He went. And I'm telling you, this father and son have the most beautiful relationship. This was years ago, have the most beautiful relationship right now. The son went to yeshiva and grew tremendously. He's a ben Torah, Baal Yishmayim, a mensch in every way. Sometimes you have to learn as a parent, like, just drop ourselves and be there for our kids as friends. And invest in their interests. K'nei l'cha chaver. K'nei l'cha chaver. I remember years ago, a story, it's a beautiful book. If you want a book on chinuch, one of the most beautiful books on chinuch I've ever read in my life. It's not titled chinuch at all. The biography of Reb Shlomo Freifeld. If you haven't read it yet, it's kedai to get today. It's life-altering. Shlomo Freifeld was a tzaddik, was the Rosh Yeshiva of Shaar Yashiv, a Talmud of Rav Huttner, incredible person. What happened was there was this young man from somewhere out west, Jewish but completely irreligious, grew up irreligious, and he was searching. And he left even his home. He loved the outdoors. He loved agriculture, planting, and he decided that's where he's going. He ended up in South Dakota, some college studying agriculture, but living on an Indian reserve over there. Working the land, living off the land, and he was loving it. That was his way. For a few years, he was doing this. And one day, he heard about this woman on some other Indian reserve that was like, you know, like some big bar chochem, something like that the Indians go to for advice. And he says, I want to go talk to her. I want to go learn from her. And he travels. It was like a whole journey. And like he didn't have a car or anything. He's hiking through prairies and hills and whatever it was. He finally thought, he didn't even know if he was going to the right place. He gets to this reserve. He finds this older woman, you know, sitting there on the floor somewhere with smoke rising. I don't know, whatever it was, the scene. And he says, I came to learn from you. And she looked at him and somehow she knew, and maybe it was from a conversation. No, you're not one of us. You're not one of us. You shouldn't be here. You're of the people from the holy man of the rock, the holy white man of the rock. Reference to Moshe Rabbeinu, based on the holy, that's who you are, that's where you should be. This is what this Indian woman tells him. And he's never thought in his life about like pursuing Yiddishkeit in a deeper fashion at all. That wasn't part of his agenda. Like he was finding himself out in the world. He couldn't believe it. He says, you sure? Yeah, go. He didn't even know what to do. And he found some Jew and he started talking. Somehow they sent him to Shaar Yashiv. And he gets to Shaar Yashiv, his yeshiva, which primarily at that time was a kiryat yeshiva. And someone brought him to Rav Shlomo Freifeld. And Rav Shlomo Freifeld, in their initial conversation, just starts talking to him about the outdoors, talking to him about how he works the field, talking about hunting and tracking elk. And this man was amazed, this rabbi, he's so interested. And the next day he comes back, and there was a bris in the yeshiva. And Rav Freifeld saw him from a distance and tells him to bring him up close. He hardly could watch, he didn't even know what this was. But he was so honored that Rav Freifeld noticed him and brought him, and they ended up the next few weeks spending much time every day talking. And slowly Rav Freifeld was teaching him also about Yiddishkeit in these conversations, and he was buying in. And one day he was sitting in Rav Freifeld's office, and Rav Freifeld had to leave to go get something, and he sees by Rav Freifeld behind his desk a few books on the floor. And he says, wait. You know, he knew at this point already, those are holy, his books are all Svarim, they're holy books. They shouldn't be on the floor. How'd they get there? So he goes around to go pick up the books. And he sees, what are the books? The history of Indians, understanding Indian reserves, hunting. And he realized how much his Rebbe loved him. And he realized that this Rebbe was putting in time, learning about his interests. He didn't know anything about this stuff. Why would he? Just so he could have conversation, just so he could build a relationship. means I go to a Kanye concert and I learn about Indian reserves for my children. And especially in those later years, that's the friendship that we have. That's the bond that we have. That goes a long way. But you're thinking this is all beautiful. You're thinking this is all beautiful and there's so much we spoke about and understanding how to let go. Understanding as well the difference between Shema b'ni Musar avicha and Torah simecha. Understanding no longer do we preach and we have to just, in a very soft way, understanding the friendship of going to a Kanye concert with my kid. But where's the real chinuch come into play? That's all good advice, perhaps. It's advice to be able to keep the relationship going. What about chinuch? I still have so much I want to give over. There's still so often that I see my children in ways that I wish they could be better. What about that part for the older years? So there I want to share with you an idea that truth is for our children from every age, but even more so at these ages. Pasuk says in Parshas Emor, Emor al Kahanim v'amarta aleim. And it teaches, it's telling, Moshe Rabbeinu is being told to teach the laws of Tumah to Kohanim. Emor al Kohanim v'amarta aleim. And Rashi there picks up on the famous question that Pasuk is completely redundant. Emor al Kohanim v'amarta aleim. The second v'amarta is superfluous. We already say to the Kohanim. What if they say to the Kohanim and say to them? What's going on here? So Rashi there says famously, Lahazir gedolim ala ketanim. The pasuk about chinuch. The first Omar is teach the Kohanim. Teach them to know the laws of Tumah v'Tara. And the second Amarta is to teach that they should be inspired in a way that they should teach their children. Emar v'Amarta. That they should be able to teach their children. That's the second Amarta. So Rav Moshe Feinstein in Drash Moshe in the Sefer on Chumash, yes, I don't... It's not said in that way. Both Amiras, the Amar v'Amarta, are both being spoken to the older Kohen. It doesn't say in the Pasuk, Emar Kanim, Veheim Omrim. And then, both Amiras are to the first Kohen, so how could it be? He says, you know what it means? Teach the Kohanim to keep these laws of Tumah v'Tara. And then say to them again, that they have to keep them in a way that's full of passion, full of love, in such a beautiful manner that they then will be the role models to their children. Both Amiras are to the parents to understand that Torah and mitzvahs is not just about keeping, but keeping it in a way that we're imbuing it into our children. That we are the greatest, most important role models of our children. It's not in what we say, it's in what we do. It's not in what we say, it's in what we do. And this is true throughout our... Thank you so much. It's so true in throughout our children's lives, but how much more so when our children are older and adults. Why? Because when they're younger, they're still naive. And yes, they're watching us and picking up on much. But the older they get, the more they pick up on. The more they perceive, the more they understand. The more they watch everything that we do. You want to know how to be the best father and mother to an older child? Be the best you. In a very real way. Emar ve'amarta is to us. We want so much for our children, but sometimes we're not the ones living up to that. Be that role model. A few months ago, I had a young boy, 16, 17-year-old boy, he opened up to me that he was vaping. He started vaping. And I was trying my best to be mechazik him, to inspire him that it's not good for him, it's not healthy for him, it's not something he should be doing. So he said in the conversation, Rabbi, you know why I started vaping? You see, my parents always told me not to vape. And a couple weeks ago, he didn't see me watching, but I saw my father vaping. Saw my father vaping. This is what he told me. This is what this young boy told me. So we could tell them everything in the world, but if we're not acting in such a way, We're not giving it over as role models. That's how our children learn from us more than any other way. And even more so when our children are more mature and older and married. It's true. Musar Avicha doesn't work anymore. There's going to be a wall put up. And we have to be able to let go. But it doesn't mean we stop inspiring them by who we are. And that's the greatest inspiration. Being role models to them in the most beautiful of ways. And I think that's how I want to end with the following. Just read you an excerpt. The words of Rav Soloveitchik, Zecher Tzadik Lishvaracha. He wrote this. The Rav wrote this talking about his mother. And talking about the chinuch of his mother, the Torah Simecha. But as we've suggested here this morning, Torah Simecha is for fathers and mothers at this stage of life, I believe. So listen to what he says to understand the difference between Musar Avicha and Torah Simecha. Such beautiful just to hear his relationship with his father, his mother. People are mistaking and thinking that there's only one Mesorah and one Mesorah community. The community of the fathers. It's not true. We have two Mesoros, two traditions, two communities, two Kabbalahs. The Mesorah community of the fathers and that of the mothers. Shema b'ni Musar Avicha, ve'al titash Torah Simecha. What is the difference between those two Mesoros? What is the distinction between Musar Avicha and Torah Simecha? Let us explore what one learns from the father, one learns from the mother. One learned much from the father. How to read a text, the Chumash, the Gemara, how to comprehend, how to analyze, how to conceptualize, how to classify, how to infer, how to apply. One also learns from the father what to do and what not to do. What is morally right and what is morally wrong. Father teaches us on the discipline of thought, as well as the discipline of action. Father's tradition is an intellectual, moral one. That is why it's identified with Musar, the biblical term for discipline. What is Torah Simecha? And let's listen to Torah Simecha, because of course this is for mothers always, but it's for fathers as well at this later stage of life, I believe, the Aleph Mem, the middle stages of children. What kind of Torah does the mother pass on? I admit that I'm not able to define precisely the role of the Jewish mother. Only by circumscription I hope to be able to explain it. Permit me to draw upon my own experiences. I used to have long conversations with my mother. In fact, it was a monologue rather than a dialogue. She talked and I happened to overhear. What did she talk about? I must use an halachic term in order to answer this question. She talked minyani diyoma. I used to watch her arranging the house in honor of the holiday. I used to see her recite tfilos. I used to watch her recite the Sedra every Friday night. And I still remember the nostalgic tune. I learned from her very much. Most of all, I learned that Judaism expresses itself not only in formal compliance with the law, but also in a living experience. She taught me that there's a flavor, a scent, a warmth to mitzvahs. I learned from her the most important thing in life, to feel the presence of the Almighty and the gentle pressure of His hand resting upon my frail shoulders. Without her teaching, which quite often were transmitted to me in silence, I would have grown up a soulless being, dry and insensitive. The laws of Shabbos, for instance, were passed on to me by my father. They are Musar Avicha. The Shabbos is a living entity, as a queen was revealed to me by my mother. It's a part of Torah Simecha. The fathers knew much about Shabbos. The mothers lived the Shabbos, experienced her presence, and perceived her beauty and splendor. The fathers taught generations how to observe Shabbos. Mothers taught generations how to greet the Shabbos and how to enjoy her 24-hour presence. The flavor in our homes that we give our children, there's nothing more special. There's nothing more we can do for them as mechanchim. And it's in the most subtle, beautiful ways where no wall will be put up. We have our children by our homes for Shabbos, for Yontif. Make them the most beautiful homes that they've ever experienced. And they'll learn from us. They'll learn from the way we make Kiddush, from the way we light licht on Shabbos. They'll learn from the excitement we have preparing, not with intensity and through, but with a passion, with an excitement. They learn from us, Amar v'Amarta, from us as being the role models to them. And that never ends. And we're there, Aseh L'Charav, in that way forever. Forever. But it only will work in a beautiful way if we learn how to be K'nei L'Chachaver. If we build the relationship in such a way and they feel that we're their best friends. They feel that we respect them and take that step back and give them their ability to make decisions and to grow. And they'll never stop learning from our ways and from who we are. And be zoicha to such nachas from our children. Be zoicha to dori doros, shomer Torah mitzvos, v'oyev Hashem, of Yira Lakim, v'anshe emes, of all that we daven for every single Lel Shabbos. Be zoicha to simcha and bracha for each and every one of you and your children always.